Welcome to the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast, where we highlight nonprofit innovators, leaders, and influencers every week that are changing the sector for the better. I'm your host, Delaney Mullenix, Executive Director of Nonprofit Hub. If you're not for profit and all for purpose, you're in the right place. You see, we know you're already doing good, but we've designed this podcast to help nonprofit professionals find growth, joy, and connection. So tune in weekly for new episodes to elevate your cause, spread the news, and share the resources we share with you.
We'd like to thank DonorBox for sponsoring today's episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast. DonorBox is the online fundraising engine of choice for over 50,000 organizations in 96 countries. Their intuitive fundraising software was designed with your donors in mind. Go to donorbox.org to sign up today. That's DonorBox.org.
Hello, Nonprofit Hub. This is your host, Delaney Mullenix. In this episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast, I speak to Tim Lockey. He is the founder and CEO of The Human Stack and also the co-host of the Why IT Matters podcast. Tim is exceptional. He has so many insights into the nonprofit sector, and he truly believes that digital transformation is affordable and scalable with nonprofits of all sizes. And a big part of the human stack is the concept of digital transformation and how there's two parts that need to work together. One is digital upgrading, which you might know as the tech stack, and one is known as digital maturity, which is the humans that this technology is actually made for. You guys are going to love this episode. Stay tuned. Tim, welcome to the Nonprofit Hub Radio Podcast.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so excited for you to be here. I said in our post today that there can only be one Tim Lockey, but could you please tell everyone what you do?
Yeah, my name is Tim Lockey. I live here in Bozeman, Montana, which is where I grew up. I spent about 15 years out of Montana and then came home. And I help nonprofits use technology, and I focus on the way that humans behave with technology and the way that consultants deploy technology for nonprofits.
Yes. So the human stack is what you do now. What were you doing before you started this huge passion project?
Yeah, I've been in nonprofits since I was 18, which is 3 decades now. That is so much time. Yeah. I know. And so I've always been in nonprofits. The work matters to me a lot, especially the grassroots part of that. And I saw that firsthand when I was working in nonprofits. I wanted to be kind of a speaker, writer, whatever. And that was not my jam. My jam was helping speakers and writers get their it together. And so I was always in the back room working on the computers and the data and setting up mobilization databases, fundraising databases, all of that kind of work, and really just leaned into that and said, this is my contribution. This is what I do best. So I worked in that, and then really fell in love with the way Salesforce in particular was doing that kind of work. So I started a company called Now It Matters, focusing on implementing Salesforce for nonprofits. I started that in 2010. And then in 2019, I was at a conference and had this aha moment when someone put a slide up that said 90% of organizations collect data, but only 5% use that data to make decisions. And it just caught me off guard. I was already thinking like something's not quite right about the way we do consulting. And it just kind of broke my brain. It just didn't work for me anymore. The work that I had been doing, I didn't believe in it, which made it really hard to sell, really hard to promote, really hard to believe in it. And so I went and reworked, just thought about how do we do this for about 6 months, came up with a different methodology. And then I've spent the last few years rolling that methodology out, learning how to talk about it, learning how to make that language accessible. And about a year ago, I started the Human Stack because I just realized the Now It Matters brand was really, you know, Salesforce for nonprofits. And that didn't fit me as well anymore. This is really humans and technology. So that's what the Human Stack is.
Right. That's incredible. Two comments on data collection. We had a webinar, and I was just speaking with someone about this morning, who has an accounting firm that specializes in working with nonprofits. And one of my favorite ever webinars was an accounting firm, and it was about budgeting and how when nonprofits have to make a decision, and like you and I were just talking about, just like the mass, what do you say, the bloodbath, just like these mass like layoffs and all of these like great solutions providers having to eliminate like nonprofit programming or nonprofit education, total departments, customer service, you name it. And in order to make that decision, they probably went through a series of decisions using data, right? Like they needed to use data to decide what was going to be best for their company moving forward financially, mission-wise, whatever. But I feel like with nonprofits, when we think about adding a program or we think about eliminating a program, like that decision needs to be made. I think a lot of times we look inward, like at our hearts, and we're like, what program should we cut and what program should we keep? And it's not based on data, but that data you can get like quite easily. And so anyways, the webinar was about a matrix of like deciding, is it helping to meet your mission, right? Like it's just like a checkbox, like go across the matrix. Is it meeting your mission? How many people are you serving? What's your reach? And then like financially and human resource wise, how much is it taking from your organization? And then based on the matrix and where those things, you know, what's the total, like, well, how does everything line up? Then you can make a driven decision based on data that's going to be best for your organization versus like what programs are like near and dear, right, to your heart, or like what you think is doing best without any data.
I love that. That's really interesting. What comes to mind when you're saying that is what I discovered in studying economics and then thinking a lot about the difference between the impact economy and the for-profit economy. And there's an inversion, which means that they are not different industries. And I'll get really passionate about this because it's so important to understand the impact economy is a different economy with a different currency than the for-profit.
Yeah.
And in the for-profit economy, what you're doing is you're doing as little as you can for as much as you can to create profit. I'm overstating that, of course, but that's the business model.
Yeah.
In the nonprofit business model, where you're out to create impact, you do as much as you can for as little as possible. And so when you're looking at those numbers, this is your point on data-driven decisions is absolutely right, but the math might be slightly different. So it might still make sense to do something that has an important return that's a small number return because the impact is so important. And there isn't, for some of the world's hardest problems, there is not economies of scale. And we have to decide if those are important enough anyway. And that's still a data-driven decision.
Yeah.
So I love the idea of that matrix. I'm really intrigued by that. I would love
to see that. Yeah, that includes some of those like qualitative measures that that you still can use as important to your decision-making. It's balanced with the other things that you can.
Absolutely.
The other thing was that I got totally called out earlier this week to, guess what? A new program that I wanted to add to the nonprofit of. And I said, I was talking to, you know, the vendor, the person who was going to help us like launch this new program. And I kind of finished. He's like, well, fill me in. Like, what are your thoughts? Blah, blah, blah. I give him my 2 cents. And he goes, can I stop you right now, Delaney? And I said, yeah. And he said, I heard you say, I think twice. And he said, I don't want to have a conversation with you until you know the data.
That's impressive.
And I was like, dang, like you got me.
That is so impressive. Yeah, that is really.
I love hate you right now. Like, okay, I'll go get the data. So yeah, that was two things I just came to my mind. I was like, yeah, you got me. Okay, well, to help us really get to know you, Tim, I love to ask some funky questions. But what is your pet peeve and why?
Okay, This is so random. I don't know why this is coming to mind, but it is. But my pet peeve is soup. I just don't like soup. I know, that's a whole food category.
Is that allowed to be a pet peeve?
I don't know. I mean, I think so, because I actually do like to eat some soups, but the idea of soup is just like, I'm annoyed if I hear it. I'm like, oh, why's it got to be soup? Like, So I don't know. That's my pet peeve. I'm going with it. It is a pet peeve, and I'm going with it. And I think it's because in my family growing up, we would have soup on Sundays. And I think if I had it now, I would think it was good soup.
Yeah.
But at the time, I did not think it was good soup. And I just like grew to an aversion to, like, I have an emotional response to soup. Nice. So that's why it's a pet peeve.
You sometimes just don't acquire like an appreciation for things until you're a little bit older. Like,
yeah,
I could not stand Brussels. Brussels sprouts were like the devil when I was a child.
I think they've changed. Brussels sprouts, I think, taste different now.
Really?
And I'm not the only one. Yeah, I think they used to be more bitter. Now I'm thinking I should go get some data around that because I'm saying I think, but I feel like I've heard that someplace, so I'm going to go find out.
Now. Yeah, and now they're delicious. I order them like every restaurant I go to.
No, they are so good. Yeah. I mean, let's just agree. You can make them good or bad, right? Like bacon is amazing, but if you boil bacon, like it's not amazing, right? So I don't know. I feel like some of it is like, I feel like we've gotten better at making them, but
yeah. Anyway. Roasted for the win, I think.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Yes. Well, let's jump more into like the name of what you've started, the Human Stack. I only learned of one of the concepts that you use quite frequently in your methodology, probably within the past 12 months. So can you explain to all of our listeners what exactly a tech stack and a human stack is?
Yeah. So a tech stack is the pieces of technology that you use in your organization. And in fact, each of those technologies has a stack underneath that, and then a stack underneath that until you get to like the base code, right? And the base code of technology, digital technology, is zeros and ones. It all boils down to making insanely fast if-then decisions on zeros and ones. And what you do is you layer on multiple types of technology, whether you know that's a BIOS and then that's language, and all the way up to the one that we experience the most, which is a GUI or a graphic user interface. And that's where we, you know, experience the user interface. Mm-hmm. So when we click stuff on our mouse and type things in, that's the GUI. And it's the top of the stack. And it doesn't matter to know any of that except to say, if you got one piece of technology, that's a technology. But if you have two, you got a stack. And that's important because if you have two, you got to keep track of what one of them is doing and then what the other one's doing. And then you have this meta conversation about what's happening between them. They call it interoperability, right? And so as soon as you add more and more, the tech stack becomes more complex, and you have to make sure that you are integrating each of those pieces of technology to each other. And they stack up, so they call it the tech stack.
Yeah. I think sometimes this is like one of those concepts that, unless you're really, really involved in like the technology of your organization, might still feel like, you know, one ear out the other. Tell me what, like, share an example of a tech stack.
Yeah. The simplest tech stack maybe ever is about three things, right? And this is for really small nonprofits that are just getting going. They're going to have a simple website, and it might be one page on someone else's website, right? So they're going to have that. They're going to have QuickBooks to keep track of the money.
Yep.
And they're going to have an email to sign up for QuickBooks and to log in to whatever page they're on, right? So that is a simple starter tech stack, right?
Yep.
A website and a general ledger, you know, QuickBooks Online, and then your email suite. Now, if you take each of those and grow them a little bit, just one layer up, when you got that email, you also probably got Google Docs and Suite or, you know, Microsoft 365 that came with a whole business suite. So you actually have access to a bunch of things inside of that collaborative, you know, information sharing and meetings and all of that, right? And then you, in order to collect money off your website, you're going to create an online donation page, right? And then you're going to ideally connect that to your QuickBooks so that all of those transactions are going in.
Yeah.
That's so you can just see, like, even at small levels really small organizations have a tech stack. It's just a couple of tools that you use together. Right.
Yeah.
And then as organizations get bigger and bigger, there's kind of one big break point, which is when they move from tracking all of these things on spreadsheets to moving inside of a central system. And that's usually called a CRM, customer mm-hmm. relationship management. And that is a pretty big moment in an organization's digital journey when they move from spreadsheets to a CRM.
Yes. That would be a huge. Yeah.
Right. So that's what I mean by tech stack, is these different pieces of technology that work together.
Okay. And then the human stack.
So this didn't exist. It was the problem. So here's how I learned to say it to my mom, because I tried for a couple of years to say this in a way that my mom could get. Yeah. My mom's really smart. Don't get me wrong, but she's not into tech. So she's always my best tech.
Right. What I do either.
Right. Yeah. So when you can pass the mom test, you know, okay, I've got it dialed in. Okay. So let me explain human stack this way. So I would say, mom, imagine that Salesforce is like a car manufacturer, and my old business, the consulting firm, was like a car dealership. And nonprofits would come to me and they'd order a CRM car, you know, and they would want like donor advised lighting and the soft credit tow package, or we'd customize it to their needs. And then we would tell them it's ready. We would give them their keys at this, you know, at a thing called sign off. And then we would maybe take it to their place of work, and it would sit in the parking lot there, not really doing anything. Or we'd give them the keys and they would try and drive it off the lot, and they might run it into, you know, the wall or something, right? Because the real issue is that they didn't know how to drive.
Yeah.
And in technology, what we've done is we've trained human behavior to acquire technology without asking the question, do we know how to drive it? And we don't have driver's ed inside of the professional services. This is my big beef, and it is with the consulting companies who have not created adequate methodologies around teaching users how to use technology. Mm-hmm. And instead, they have aligned all of their services around how to build technology.
Yeah.
Right. And so back to the human stack then. When you build a car, you're building it on the tech stack. So the car is the tech stack. But to go anywhere, you have to have someone that can drive it. And that behavior of driving, because driving is behavior based, that driving behavior is the human stack.
Yeah.
And just like the tech stack, if you have one human using technology, you can have an LMS, a learning management system, and they can learn that one skill, right? But if you have more than one person, now you have a community of users, and you have to not just pay attention to how each of them work, which is called digital maturity, but you have to also pay attention to how they relate to each other. And that's called digital culture. Mm-hmm. And so the tech stack is the idea. Humans are involved in your information system. Your information systems are part human and part technology. And in order for them to work well, you have to have a good tech stack, a car that runs, and you have to have drivers that know what they're working on together. And that's the human stack. And so, and we found that that's actually, it's more challenging, configuring humans is more challenging than configuring technology. Mm-hmm. Humans are less predictable, and, you know, you have to train them more than one time.
Yeah.
And then the base code is different. The base code of technology is all zeros and ones. The base code of humans isn't true false like it is for digital technology. It's in out. It is, do I belong to this group or not? Am I in this group or out of this group? And in the work environment, it is, do I have a job or not? And so you're always aligned with, how does my work look like to the people that are looking at my work, that have power in the organization, that are looking at what I do, and what are we trying to accomplish together? Yeah. And all of that requires a different approach than the methodology that we use to create technology together.
Hi, Hi, this is Kevin Burgess, the editor of the Nonprofit Hub Radio podcast, and I'd like to tell you about today's sponsor, DonorBox. DonorBox has a simple mission: to do everything possible to support nonprofit organizations in their efforts to make a difference. From hitting your first campaign goal to growing into a sustainable and thriving nonprofit, DonorBox makes it easy for organizations to maximize donations and attract more supporters. From charities to social impact groups to faith-based organizations, DonorBox delivers a simple, seamless donation experience for your supporters. So visit DonorBox.org to sign up with no setup or monthly fees and no contract required. That's DonorBox.org. Now let's get back to today's episode.
I love the terms digital culture and maturity and versus digital upgrading. So like keeping those things kind of, I mean, would you say, I think this is something that you talk about too, like if you were to have a graph, right? One is digital upgrading, one is digital maturity. You should have like a straight line, a diagonal line, right?
Yeah. I'm so impressed. Like, yeah, that's so well said. And you're exactly right. The thing that I feel like we want is for technology to do it all for us. And even with AI, it kind of feels like it can, but it cannot, right? All you get with a tech stack, all you can do on it is upgrade it. All you get with a car is a better car, right? That's the whole thing that you can get with a better car. And I'm not saying that's not nothing. And, you know, like you can do a lot with technology, and I love what you can do with technology. I'm a fan, but it doesn't matter if you have a car that is amazing, but you don't know how to drive it. And especially if you don't know how to drive it collectively, then it's not really that helpful. And what we've done is I think that we've overinvested in acquiring technology and underinvested in helping humans use technology. And if we would reverse that trend, we would see a lot more impact. And one of the areas of this that I think is really easy for people to miss is disruption. So one time when my daughter was really young, she went on a trip with her grandmother and everything went wrong. They ended up at the wrong airport. Planes weren't there. And my daughter held it together because her grandmother said, "You're going to get chocolate ice cream when we get to where we're going." And when they got there and they got to the front of the line, you know, and they ordered chocolate ice cream, the guy was like, "We don't have any more chocolate. We're all out of chocolate." Oh. And my daughter, who had been holding it together all day long, burst into tears, right? And all of us, out of empathy, feel so bad for her, even now, years later, because all of us have experienced what we call change saturation, which is like more disruption than you have capacity to handle.
Yeah.
And what we've done with organizations is we've introduced technology in a way that creates change saturation levels that are so high that the disruption exceeds humans' ability to deal with that disruption. And part of the way that we do that is that, you know, when we start a project, we immediately commandeer a couple of people into discovery to say, "Here's what we need." And then those same people, because they helped define it, need to stick around for other meetings and, you know, the configuration, the user acceptance testing, the data validation. And so what started out as a small time commitment turned into a months long commandeering of their time that probably wasn't accounted for in their job description. Yeah. So you take people that are already working really full time, doing really challenging work that requires professional skills already, and then you're adding a whole layer of new things onto them. And this happens all the time over and over with technology projects.
Oh yeah.
And the response to that is that people are mad at the tech. They resent it. They're frustrated by it. They don't have any ways to express that because we don't talk about it. Yeah, exactly. And so when people say the system doesn't work, it can be that maybe it's miscalculating, but probably not. It's just a big calculator. But they may resent it. And in a lot of cases, people try and find control back in their lives. And they do that by using spreadsheets, which give them a lot more autonomy with data. So they'll export, they'll use a spreadsheet because they understand it, they can do more with it. And then honestly, when they got trained, it was probably a very small 2-day training. You know, everybody's in a room. It was out of context on their daily work. they probably didn't retain it.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of like after you're at a family reunion and you don't know who your neighbors are, or your relatives are, and it's too late to ask and you feel embarrassed about it, that shame attaches to belonging. And so if you say, I don't know how to do this, you're threatening your sense of belonging in an organization. So you don't say it. And pretty soon you have a bunch of users that don't know what they're doing with a new system that they're already frustrated with.
Yeah.
So this is one of, this is the type of thing that we can introduce with new technology without even, without realizing, without thinking it. And this creates real, like very legitimate trauma for people who have PTSD experiences around implementing technology. I've been in multiple rooms where people say, if we're doing a new CRM, I'm quitting.
Yeah. Yeah. One time I had to migrate an entire electronic health record system at a mental health practice. And I was like, no, like, we're not doing it. Like that of like secure private data, years of it, that's scary. Scary.
Yeah, absolutely. And in those situations, you have to actually know the tech stack really, really well in order to be able to do it. So there's a level of expertise that is often not recognized. And I think one of the things I love about the nonprofit space is that it is a, you know, don't tell me what can't be done or what's impossible, because our whole business is working on impossible scenarios and making them happen anyway.
Yeah.
And I feel like that may have gone too far sometimes. We're just unrealistic about things that we need to pay more attention to. And the overhead myth and scarcity mindset certainly don't help with that either.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And another problem with this whole concept of digital maturity and like training staff, sometimes nonprofit teams are so small that, like you said, if someone was involved in implementing a new technology or something and that person leaves, that tech wisdom left with them. Like,
yeah,
no one else knows the login. No one else knows what's going on in that account. No one knows how to like work that technology. And that's something that I hear a lot too, is that, you know, people leave and all of that leaves.
So often we have a human, not a human stack, right? And then, and you've heard it too, right? Where they talk about the admin or the DBA, database administrator or whatever, getting hit by a bus, right? Yeah. And they start like, I don't know what it is with buses and admins, but it seems like they're out to get them.
It's so funny that you said that, because the previous executive director of Nonprofit Hub said, if I get hit by a bus. And I went to a panel with four executive directors, and I kid you not, that is the one thing that everyone said. If I get hit by a bus, I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm like, what?
What's with these buses? Yeah. And you're right. That institutional knowledge, you know, is really impossible to hand off. You can do some knowledge shares. You can never do the context share. And that's why I think the human stack is actually so important, because we need a methodology that doesn't center all of the knowledge on one person, which also, by the way, creates isolation.
Yeah.
And if the thing that we're trying to do is create belonging, and you tell that one person that knows how to do it, hey, you can do stuff none of the rest of us can, what you're saying is a compliment and you mean well, but actually that's a pretty isolating feeling. Like,
see, I think it's also cause for burnout.
Absolutely.
Because every solution to a problem is going to be using this technology. And then you're like, well, put that on my to-do list. Well, put that on my to-do list. Well, put that on
absolutely.
My to-do list. Absolutely. Right. On my to-do list. Cause like you can't delegate it anymore.
Yep. So you're hitting on exactly why I felt like we needed a different methodology. When you stand up technology, you have, you know, waterfall methodology or agile methodologies. But when you're trying to help humans engage it, you've got end user training, which all of us consultants know doesn't work. So we hand it to you by calling it train the trainer. And like, it is actually slightly better and is definitely less expensive. But it doesn't work either, because humans don't, like, humans need a bunch of times. We learn through practice, not through a stand in front training. And so, yeah, I created this methodology. And then to your point with small nonprofits, well, I'll tell you about my dad. My dad learned to drive when he was 6 years old, and it was on a ranch in eastern Montana. And my grandpa was like, there's a steering wheel and a gas pedal, and don't go above 5 miles an hour. And there's the cows. Go get the cows, bring them back to the barn, And when we're done milking, take them back, right? That was my dad's driver's ed. None of this parallel parking or how far to the next car, none of that kind of stuff. No city driving. When it comes to the way that technology is maintained in the long run, not set up, but maintained, there's governance and adoption and center of excellence and all of this thought leadership of change management and the rest, but it's all city driving. And 80% of nonprofits have 15 staff or less. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't fit them. And it also, it doesn't work. But let's ignore that for a second, because for 80% of nonprofits, it wouldn't fit them even if it did. And so I took my methodology, I pulled all of the city driving out of it and created Digital Driver's Ed for small teams, which is focused on nonprofits with 5 to 15 staff, exactly for the reason that you're talking about. Because what I want to do is on small teams where there is the highest availability of transfer of knowledge, I want to focus on that piece and less on the execution piece. And there's like four really basic skills a team can learn so that they have dispersed the knowledge on how to use that technology. Business. And then there's less risk of that one person winning the lottery, which is better than getting hit by a bus, right?
Yeah. I mean, weird though that some of your programming is called Driver's Ed and we're going to teach people how not to run over executive directors of nonprofits and buses.
But ever put that together? That's brilliant. I have not even thought of that. Oh, that is awesome. Like, we got teaching bus drivers to avoid accidents and executive directors. Oh man, Delaney, that's hilarious. That is so funny.
Oh, well, are these four skill sets that you mentioned, is that a part of your driver's ed for small teams program?
Yep. Right. We break it up into four zones and they're sequential. And the first skill is where are we at today? Like just taking stock of your current state. And the second skill is how do you maintain data and how do you fix data that's incorrect from the past? Because until you trust your data, it's really hard to use reports. It's hard to make decisions with your data. And that's held at a perception level. If people don't perceive that the data is correct and getting better, then they won't use it. So we focus on how do you maintain the data? And then the next one is how do you manage requests? And our goal is to get everybody on the team to complain about the technology as much as possible and as specifically as possible in less than 30 seconds. And because complaining is a sign of hope, right? Whining is useless. And all of us who have kids know, like, whining is nothing. But if you get someone that can complain, then you're like, okay, I can deal with that. Or I can tell you I can't deal with that. But at least it's a conversation, right?
Yeah.
So we teach people how to do that. And then we teach I call them digital voluntolds because it's small nonprofits. Somebody got voluntold to go manage the system, right? So we teach digital voluntolds how to take all of those complaints that are coming in. And those might be conversations that need to happen. Those might be decisions, or they may be like, this technology doesn't work for me, any of that, and put it into one of five buckets so that they know what to do with that, right? And then the last skill that we teach is how to manage all of that in about 3 hours a week forever, right? Because there's an amount of this that just needs to kind of be maintained. And so I want to get that to a sustainable level so that your tech stack is being maintained well and your digital maturity is growing all the time. And then you've got time working for you. And this is the thing that I think nonprofits don't realize is if you can switch the polarity on this and it's not entropy, then your systems and your digital maturity and digital culture can get better over time, just like you're talking about, up and to the right on upgrading as needed and getting more mature as you have additional staff or turnover or new staff or as you grow.
Yeah, of course. Well, I definitely want you to share any other ways that nonprofits or supporters of your methodology can get involved. But one last question, maybe. What is the goal and the true purpose of nonprofit technology?
I've got two answers for that. I used to only have one, but the two answers are one, connecting humans.
Yeah.
And the other is data-driven decisions.
Okay. There we go. There you have it, folks. Okay. Any other ways that we can let listeners know how to get involved with you, how to find you?
They can find me at humanstack.com. And if they want to, I've got a very simple, less than 5-minute quiz you can take about your digital health. And then we are we're taking pre-registrations for Digital Driver's Ed for small teams right now. So if they're interested in that program, they can go and sign up for a newsletter and go look at that program. And if you're on this podcast, you want to contact me, feel free to reach out and let me know. And I'd love to sit with you and hear about what's interesting about you with technology. And I could talk about it all day long. So I'm always really curious what people are doing with it.
Yeah, but only if you're complaining, not whining. You can complain.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. No whining, only complaining.
Yeah. So we always try to include a segment at the end of every podcast episode called Good News for Nonprofits. I think your driver's ed is very good news, but anything else that you'd like to share with the nonprofit sector?
Yeah, I feel like there's a shift in the wind around consultants recognizing how important the end product of our work is increasingly, instead of focusing just on here's the few steps we do right now. I feel like there's a shift in the wind around we need to actually see this work result in measurable outcomes. And I think that's really important. And I think that provides accountability for consultants in a way that I think is really important. Because experts do really good work, but we need to actually see the results of those in measurable ways.
Yep. Yeah, of course. I love that. Well, thank you for joining us, Tim. It was awesome.
Thanks so much for having me. This is it's always such a pleasure to talk with you because you think of stuff I haven't, like driving the bus with driver's ed, of course. Like that's so great. So yeah, thank you for having me.
Great. All right, everyone. We will talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us for this Nonprofit Hub Radio podcast episode. For more resources on fundraising, marketing, and all things nonprofit, be sure to check out the number one nonprofit toolbox at nonprofithub.org. We hope you'll join us next week for another episode of the Nonprofit Hub Radio podcast.